Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
And speaking of driving, on air and on the road, my man Jay Gruden is driven by the Ted Britt Automotive Group. Ted Britt Ford in Chantilly and Fairfax, your F-150 headquarters, Ted Britt Chantilly Lincoln, and Ted Britt Chevrolet in Sterling, all home of Ted Britt for Life. Lifetime vehicle coverage, see and shop them all at TedBritt.com. And the aforementioned Jay Gruden is with us, as he is each and every Monday at 3 o'clock. Hello, Jay. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hello, Chris. Doing well, thank you.
Is it snowing in Florida?
No, little drizzle, about 65, 70 degrees, little drizzle.
It's tough. It's tough to, you know, to survive that, Jay. I mean, how do you overcome such odds?
That is tough, man. I had to stay inside today. I couldn't play golf.
I mean, life is just taking you apart limb by limb. I mean, I don't know how you survive.
I don't either. Talking to you, I guess, helps out a lot. You know,
well, like, I don't know if that helps out at all, but I'm glad you feel that way, Jay, and you always answer the phone, so I appreciate it. All right, let's obviously get started with the big picture. Commanders' 12th win, 6th seed. It wasn't pretty, but ultimately they got it done in the end. Besides, I guess, Marcus Mariota overall and the final play, big picture takeaway for you was what? Just, you know, sometimes you win a little bit ugly and you get away with some stuff, or did you see it a different way?
Yeah, no, exactly that. And that's what good teams do. You know, they don't always play your best football and you still win games. That's a sign of a good football team. You're not going to hit on all cylinders every week. Your running game's not going to be popping big holes. Your passing game's not going to be always precise. Your defense is going to give up some big hits. But at the end of the day, you play four quarters of football and you try to figure out a way to win at the end. And that's what Washington did. Now, they've done 12 times they've won football games, some of them ugly, some of them very pretty. But the fact of the matter is 12-5 is a hell of a record. And a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback, it's a hell of a feat.
Yeah, no doubt. So specific to Mariota, I mean, we all know what he's been in his career, and there's been some ups, some downs. We know he's mobile, athletic. We saw that on the big 33-yard run. We know he's got a strong enough arm. We know he's played well in some big games. Did anything that you saw yesterday surprise you, or is that about what you expect and like the ideal perfect scenario for what you dream up as a coach from a backup veteran quarterback and why that position is so important?
Yeah, he's a perfect backup for Jaden because he has a similar skill set. You know, he's been a good quarterback for a number of years. He's had a lot of injuries that has derailed his longevity as far as being consistent at the position. So he's had to be basically relegated to a backup now. He's a very good backup because he's very smart. He's a good team player, and he has an athletic skill set that matches, not quite as athletic as Jaden, but has athletic skill set that similar to Jaden. So they don't have to change their system at all when he comes into the game. They can run the same offense and not have to vary off what Cliff knows and what Cliff likes and what Jaden likes. So they're running the same offense, which is good. He's a good player.
Yep, no doubt. Terry was much more involved in the second half offense and obviously a great catch. And I said, Jay, the game was imperfect, about as imperfect as you can be for 59 minutes and 55 seconds or 54 seconds. And then that final play was perfect. They executed it perfectly in every which way, the throw, the catch, the protection, all the timing, because they would have gotten another playoff if it had not been caught, what have you. But Terry specifically getting way more involved in the offense in the second half, like when people said, well, what changed? What was different? It seemed like they were running more get rid of the ball quickly, more decisive, more maybe quick game, what have you, in the second half with Mariota, but also getting Terry more involved to the tune of, I think, 7 catches and 56 yards, or 7 targets, 7 catches, whatever it was. He was much more involved in the second half.
Yeah, that helps. You know, he wasn't very involved last week, and to get him going again for the playoff run is very important. And, of course, you know, the touchdown throw, I mean, what was that? Was that a fade? I mean, unbelievable. I mean, who would have thought to throw a fade in the red zone? Cliff Kingsbury should be Coach of the Year calling a
Wait a second, Jay. Jay, wait a second. Are you doing what I often do?
Yeah.
You know what that is?
Sarcasm?
Well, yes, and patting yourself on the back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, mine never worked. This one worked. So that was a little bit different.
I love it. I love it. If only Josh Doctson was a better receiver, right?
Yeah, or we'd throw it, actually, or as completable. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, no, I love the fact that Terry got more involved, and I know he's not going to waver at all. He's going to go into the playoffs, going to Tampa with a lot of confidence, and I think that passing game will have some confidence going into Tampa because Tampa – you know, I watched them against New Orleans, and their pass defense isn't very good right now. They got to rely on blitzing and getting to the quarterback that way, but it leaves their secondary vulnerable, and I think they can take some big chunks out of Tampa's defense through the air, and I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah, can't wait for that matchup, and they might not have Winfield. I don't think they're going to have Jamel Dean. They're banged up at the other safety spot as well with the kid that got in the Jordan Whitehead that got caught in the or that got in the accident the other day. So they got all sorts of issues. Before we get there, I wanted to ask you, just from your perspective, what did you see out of Jaden Daniels, and did he look compromised in any way? Because, you know, during the game they said no, he's being bent or he's being taken out for coaching, a coach's decision, no injury, no nothing. And then, you know, of course, after the game they changed the tune and they said no, he's got some leg soreness. Did you see anything that was concerning, or was Dallas and Mike Zimmer just really good? Which is kind of like what I thought. I mean, they went after him and they closed the window on him, especially on those first couple of drives where they sacked him 3-4 times in the first two drives, Jay. It didn't seem like he had a whole lot of time.
Yeah, you know, I kind of figured if they got some third down longs that Zimmer would bring some heat, and they did, and didn't handle it very good. The center got beat by Micah Parsons on a one-on-one. Yeah. I mean, Micah just ran in there wide. I mean, no quarterback could have got rid of that one. And then a couple other ones, they just got home with their pressure, and Washington's got to do a much better job protecting the quarterback in pressure situations, because we all know what's going to happen next week. You know, Todd Bowles is going to bring it. He did it last time against Washington week one on third downs, you know, cover zero, five-man rushes, six-man rushes, four-man rush with a bunch of stunts. So they're going to get after Jade. They have to do a much better job up front to protect, because if they can't protect, there's a lot of holes to be had in a defensive secondary.
Well, and one of the ways I think you can slow down a blitz, correct me if I'm wrong, is by the natural running game, right? I mean, if you can run them out of the blitz and make it third and three, third and two, and also give them the ability or take away the ability for them to just pin their ears back, you're going to have, I guess, a better chance, if you will, even against a super aggressive defense like Todd Bowles, like potentially Brian Flores in Minnesota, if you eventually meet up with them. And really, that's kind of been the problem overall here is for several weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, really since the Tennessee game, they haven't been able to unlock the natural running game. And again, it was a problem yesterday.
Yeah, it's tough, too. And that's the strength of Tampa's defense is the running defense with Vita Vea and Levante David. They're pretty good up front as far as stopping the run with little, with boxes that aren't favorable. They can play cover two and things of that nature with their secondary. Just when you get to third down and six plus where you got to really worry. So if you're right, if you can you run the ball first, second down and get some quick passes in there, get third, two and three, that will limit their blitz packages, which is very, very important. And Cliff will do a good job with personnel groupings. There's certain blitzes that you don't have in two or three tight end sets. You just can't run them. But if you're an 11 personnel all day and you're trying to spread out Todd Bowles, he's going to get after you. So you got to make sure you have your answers in that regard. But, you know, I think Jaden, I don't know if he was hurt or not in that game, but I think it was smart to take him out. It was a blitz day, and Jaden, you know, he could use a day off, you know, the afternoon off, and watch Marcus play a little bit, get himself ready mentally for the game next week.
Jay Gruden is brought to you, as always, by the Ted Britt Automotive Group. He's with us here on the BetQL Guest Hotline on a Victory Monday as we head to the NFL playoffs. One thing I wanted to ask you about, I mean, you know, and you and I have talked about Terry McLaurin and the fact that you and Kyle and I guess Bruce, you know, drafted him in 2019, and he was known as the best special teams player in the draft, but nobody really thought of him much as a wide receiver. In your wildest imaginations, is there any way, like, I know he struggled to put in up touchdowns over the last 4 years, like four in 2 years, and then five in the other 2 years under Rivera's offense, or Rivera's leadership, I should say, with quarterback Palooza and all that stuff. Is there any way that you thought even half of what Terry has turned out to be, that he would be, like, even, again, half of what he is as a receiver in the NFL when you guys took him?
When we took him, maybe not. But when we had him and when we got him in rookie minicamp and training camp, yeah, we did. Remember, we sat him out in preseason, and we knew what we had. We knew the explosion and the power that he had. Now, the one thing that, you know, really didn't really show up as his red zone ability, you know, the plus five, plus six, you know, other than running slants, maybe a corner from a slot or what have you. But the big body fades like he caught against Dallas, you know, we didn't really envision that being a big part of his package. But you throw that in there now to go along with the speed and his ability to run in breaking cuts and cross the field and all that stuff. You know, he's a all-around, well-rounded receiver. You know, there's some limitations that he might have, but he's a true number one receiver, and happy as hell that we drafted him, and happy as hell he's doing a good job now. Great job.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. Brilliant pick, obviously, in the third round of 2019. Jay Gruden is with us. All right, so Tampa, the opponent, you know, of course they went there week one, lost 37-20. They put good pressure on Baker Mayfield, but he escaped out the back door and made plays by extending windows and plays. They didn't have Marshawn Lattimore then. They may not have him now. Obviously, that would help against a guy like Mike Evans. I'm curious, Godwin was a factor, who's the kid in the third round? McMillan. He was good already, and he scored a touchdown, if memory serves me, in that game, but he's a lot better now. Do you think Tampa on offense is better now than they were at the beginning of the year, or about the same roughly?
I think they're better now, actually. I think part of the reason why, you know, Godwin was a hell of a player, but I think the switch between Rashad White and Bucky Irvin has taken them to another level. Bucky Irvin is a hell of a back. You know, he did a good job. He had, I think he had 9 carries for 70 yards in his first game. Rashad White had like 15 for 30. Now they're giving Bucky the bell cow carries, and Rashad White is spelling Bucky as opposed to the other way around. So that's a big difference for him. I think Kate Otten's injury hurts him a little bit. The tight end position is really not as existent as it was, but I think just the emergence of Bucky Irving makes them a better football team on offense.
Yeah, you know, I asked you about the wide receivers, and I'm glad you went there because I agree with you. Bucky Irving's awesome. And we know this Commanders defense, they've struggled even against, you know, somewhat unheralded pedestrian backs, right? Like the Cowboys were fairly close to breaking a couple yesterday, and they still, you know, they still did a pretty decent job overall. So, you know, good luck against Bucky Irvin, and that's my fear going into this game, along with Jalen McMillan, who, you know, again, is not going to get any of the attention that Mike Evans is going to get. So we will see how it, of course, plays out. Tampa as a whole, Jay, I'm curious on your perspective from this. You know, I said, like, I think they have a good home field advantage. I wouldn't call it a great home field advantage like some other places, but that's a, you know, that's not an easy place to play, even though I don't think people associate it with being a hard place to play. Is that fair?
Yeah, you know, it's such a big place. It's not really loud. Crowd noise doesn't really have the huge effect that it does in certain other arenas. The only thing you got to really be aware of is that goddamn cannon when they score a scared out of you. So you got to be really careful of that. But other than that, you know, just going out there and playing, and I think the crowd noise won't be that big of an issue. Obviously, it'll be a great environment. It'll be a night game. So they're just going to have to handle it the right way and make sure they stay close in the game and try to quiet the fans. There's nothing better than going on the road and having a quiet stadium and when you shut them up. And it's the greatest feeling in the world, I think, when you're coaching or playing a game.
You don't want a cannon, that's for damn sure. And yes, if you can take an obviously an early lead, and even though Baker Mayfield is capable of putting together points quickly, you always want to make a team as one-dimensional as you can. All right, so let's get to this. I think we've kind of covered enough on the Commanders. I wanted to get your thoughts on what happened elsewhere. I can't believe, you know, the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, look, they weren't going to make the playoffs ultimately anyway because Tampa won, but they had an opportunity and they still lost, and they lost in overtime at home to the Carolina Panthers. Now that says about where the Panthers are going, but can you believe how disastrous this year turned out for the Falcons from the standpoint of, you know, they spent all the money on Kirk, then they were not happy with him, they benched him, they bring in Penix, and Penix has played okay, but now what do you do? I mean, now, like, it wasn't like Penix was automatically the answer. I assume you just go forward with him, but now you got all sorts of questions. Their defense is a mess, their special teams are a mess, and I don't know what to make of the Falcons.
You know, it was a mishandling from day one, really. You know, you go out and sign Kirk, give him all the money, and then you draft Michael Penix, and then you bench Kirk in the playoff run. I mean, Kirk had some bad games, I understand that, but they're still in first place in their division or tied for first place, and they had beat Tampa twice. So they bench him, and then you got to go through the rookie growing pains and missed throws and maybe the bad reads or whatever that maybe Kirk would have, you know, beat Carolina or they would have won the game last week. So I don't know. And then the timeout issue they had at the end of the game, just a lot of mishandling of a lot of things. They're going to have to decide what to do with Kirk. You know, where's he going to go? I mean, maybe San Francisco will want to take him and they'll get rid of Brock Purdy. Who knows what's going to happen with Kirk Cousins, but he's got plenty of football left. I know that he's in good shape. He can still throw the ball around, but you're right. I mean, they have a lot of holes. You know, they drafted Penix number 10 or what, eight, whatever it was, and they needed defensive players. They could have had their pick of any defensive player in a draft, and they went out and got Penix. So a lot of weird things at Atlanta, and it didn't pay off right now. Hopefully Penix will pan out and pay off in the long run because that's the only chance they have.
I think Kirk winds up – I'm glad you said San Francisco because I've been thinking of that, you know, that whole situation. And obviously he's always been fond of Kyle Shanahan, who we worked with before working with you. But also Cleveland and Pittsburgh, I think, is two spots that probably should keep an eye on in terms of Kirk. And speaking of situations across the NFL, I mean, clearly Trevor Lawrence – was banged up this year, inconsistent. They have fallen off, and now Doug Peterson gets fired, but they're keeping Trent Baalke. I don't know. Maybe Trent Baalke's got naked pictures of Shad Khan or something. I'm not sure, but it just seems like nothing is really connected in Jacksonville. And now apparently Shad Khan said the head coach is going to report directly to him instead of Baalke. What do you make out of that whole situation? And if you're like a Ben Johnson, because Shad Khan's talking about needing innovation on both sides of the ball, if you're like a Ben Johnson who's considered the, you know, this boy wonder, would you go to a kind of a messy situation like that?
Clown show. No, absolutely not. You know, I think Ben Johnson is smarter than that. You know, he's gonna go somewhere where he has choice of his GM and who he works with, that's for sure. And I think Jacksonville is going to be relegated to hiring a very young guy without a lot of experience, maybe like a Liam Cohen from Tampa Bay, young guy who'll just be excited to get the head coaching job, or an older guy that's a retread that hasn't coached in a while. But if they're thinking about getting a young gun that has a lot of options, they're not going to get him because he's going to want to bring his own GM. The GM and head coach should be tied together. And it's just, I just don't understand it. You know, I thought maybe they'd have a chance of getting rid of Baalke and keeping Peterson for another year, but they did the other way around, which is baffling to me. But, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's going to work, but you never know.
Jared Mayo fired after 1 year in New England. And we know that's a pretty quick fall from grace because he was the hand-selected, you know, guy for Bill Belichick even before Belichick was gone, so on and so forth. It, apparently, it didn't go well behind the scenes. There were some things said, whatever, all sorts of weird things, plus, you know, their struggles on defense. They had injuries. Christian Gonzalez was in and out of the lineup. Barmore missed a lot of the year. If you were – you know, like if let's just ask you, like if New England called, right? Like they're still, I don't know. I mean, they're still considered NFL royalty, I guess, but they're a way different organization in the last 3 or 4 years than they used to be. So that's not an automatic, is it? Considering the way they kind of treated Belichick at the end and the way now Mayo is dumped after 1 year.
Yeah, you know, but they do have a young quarterback, two young quarterbacks, actually, that are pretty good. So if you're looking at a situation where you could go and maybe take a team that was 3-14 and turn them around quick, you want to have a good quarterback. And they do have Drake May, a young, talented guy that loves football and will work his ass off for you. So that's a positive. And they have some decent other younger players in the building. They have a lot of draft capital, and they also have some free agent money to spend. So there's a lot of upside going to New England. Obviously, you're going to have to win quickly. I would envision Vrabel going there. It's a perfect fit for Vrabel. He played there. Obviously, he knows the Patriot way and all that stuff. That would make the most sense. It's just a matter of who he's going to bring in as an offensive coordinator to help develop Drake May. And that's what, you know, a lot of these defensive-minded head coaches, yeah, that's a great guy. He's a tough guy. We want that mentality. But who's going to call plays for you? Who's going to develop the quarterback, which is the most important part of your football team? And that's the biggest issue these teams have.
How about Jay Gruden?
How about Jay Gruden moving to New England in the snow? Hell no. Too old for that, Chris. I'm too old for that.
You want to live half the year in Florida. That's what you want to. That's what you want to do.
Can I coach via Zoom?
If this was 2020, I guess you could. One last one for you. This one caught me by surprise. I guess I wasn't paying attention. The Seahawks ultimately won 10 games. I know Geno Smith, you know, up and down a little bit. They had some injuries at running back, blah, 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 blah. But I guess I didn't realize how bad things were. Ryan Grubb gets fired 1 year into coming over from the Washington Huskies, where the offense was electric with, you know, Penix and DeBoer and so on and so forth. And it just didn't, and they fired him. Aware of anything that looked odd to you besides just not making the playoffs? But they did win 10 games.
Yeah, that team has been underachieving for, you know, last year they had Shane Waldron. He went to Chicago, got fired to Chicago, and they underachieved a little bit on offense last year, I thought. This year they went to Ryan Grubb, and they underachieved. You look at their receivers and Tyler Lockett and Jigba, and obviously DK Metcalf. They have two outstanding backs and Kenneth Walker and Charbonnet and Geno Smith. Geno Smith is the one that really has got to be more consistent. You know, whoever his coordinator is, he can't have games where he looks like a hell of a good quarterback and then two or three series where he fumbles and throws interceptions right to the team, other team. So his consistency level is, I think, what's holding back the Seattle franchise. And then defensively, I think Coach McDonald will do a good enough job in the future to keep him competitive. I think it's a matter of Geno playing more consistent football. And he had a good year, 70%. I get it, but still he has lapses in games that cost this football team, and they, I just feel like they always underachieve with the players that they have on offense. Maybe they got to upgrade their offensive line. I don't know, but there's an issue there offensively they got to fix because they're too good talent-wise to be as stagnant as they were.
Good point. I love a good Chardonnay, too.
Yeah.
Don't you?
I always call him Chardonnay. Yeah. Yeah, hell yeah.
Jay, thank you. As always, great to catch up with you. Try and do me a favor. Listen, try and absorb the 65-degree weather and the light rain that's, causing problems for your golf game. Check in with us next week and let us know how tough it was to survive the week, okay?
I have a rule of thumb. If I have to put my windshield wipers on the way to the course, I don't go. Didn't go today.
That's probably a good rule of thumb. Thank you, Jay, as always.
All right, Chris. Thank you, guys.
There you go. That is on air and on the road. Jay Gruden is driven by the Ted Britt Automotive Group. Ted Britt Ford and Chantilly in Fairfax, F-150 headquarters. Ted Britt Chantilly Lincoln and Ted Britt Chevrolet in Sterling, home of Ted Britt for life. Lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at TedBritt.com.